From the Firebird Radio Studio, it's the Authors on Fire podcast with nationally syndicated radio host and producer, Pat Rulo.
Welcome to the Authors on Fire podcast, part of Speak Up Talk Radio's many services, home to the International Firebird Book Awards, the Positive Change Podcast Awards Hall of Fame, and our newest book song, where we create a musical masterpiece to highlight your book. I am Pat Rulo, and today I have an exciting author to share with you and a recent Firebird Book Award winner, well, actually the grand prize winner in the fiction category for our first quarter 2025 competition. He is David A. Dummer, and the book is titled Born of Bombs and Bullets, an Aaron Thornton thriller. David is a traveler, writer, Emmy-nominated producer, and author. With a professional background as both a crime investigator and clinical therapist, he brings a unique blend of psychological insight and investigative realism to his thrillers. He has explored 46 countries across 5 continents, drawing inspiration from the people, conflicts, and hidden stories he encounters. His adventures fuel the narratives of his fiction and are shared with readers through his travel blog, Trexpose. He holds degrees in international affairs from Georgetown University and clinical counseling from Johns Hopkins University. And when he's not writing or traveling, he resides on the East Coast, though he's always ready for the next adventure. And I'm looking forward to today's short adventure with him. So welcome to the network, David.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity.
Oh, my pleasure. And congratulations on winning the Firebird Book Award and the grand prize.
I appreciate that.
I appreciate your book submission. All right, my friend, plenty to talk about today. Just from the brief bio I shared, you have obviously worn many hats: crime investigator, clinical therapist, Emmy-nominated producer, and award-winning author. That's a lot. How have these diverse experiences then shaped your storytelling?
Wow. I guess it suggests I can't hold a job, doesn't it?
Well, I wasn't going to say that.
a lot of them overlap, which is kind of neat because I think a lot of people have different interests and different passions. And I think sometimes we tend to think of people only as the job they hold. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of neat to look at things in a multi-layered way. And I hope that in that sense, my writing reflects sort of a multi-layered approach to people. As a therapist, you get to learn that people are very complex. There's a lot there beneath the surface that they never share publicly. And that leads to a misunderstanding sometimes about other people. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's kind of neat in a book where you can see the character's thoughts and understand their motivations and their feelings in a more complete way. I think that's kind of fun and kind of enriches the story. And so the therapist part plays out in that way. The investigator part plays out, I think, just in sort of the procedural aspect. A lot of people just love police stuff and investigative stuff, detective work. And it's kind of fun to include that in the story too, just for realism. Mm-hmm. And so I try to write authentically. I think those experiences help in particular when you're writing thrillers, and particularly ones with complex characters.
Absolutely. And it also lends authenticity to your writing when folks know what your background is. And then when you speak about that in your book, or you have aspects or pieces and parts in your book that reflect that, I think it just adds that much more realism to the book as well. So you've traveled to 46 countries. I was wondering, is there a specific moment or a place during your travels that directly inspired Born of Bombs and Bullets?
There is, actually. I went to Belfast. I was on a home exchange, and an Irish family in the Republic of Ireland came and stayed in my home while I stayed in theirs. And they very graciously allowed me the use of their car while I was over there. And if you've ever been to Ireland, you know that it's helpful to have a car to get around. And so while I was out there sort of adventuring, it dawned on me that I'd never been to Northern Ireland, and I love history. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and make the drive. So I went to Belfast, and while I was there, I took a tour. And it's a black cab tour, similar to the taxi tour that's described in the book. And it was on that tour that I discovered that the troubles really haven't ended in Ireland or Northern Ireland. And the first thing that sort of drew my attention were these huge walls that they call peace walls that divide the neighborhoods from one another. And they have these big gates in the middle of them that allow cars to pass through. And on the top, they have these screens that are designed to stop projectiles and Molotov cocktails and rocks and anything else that might be airborne from going from one neighborhood into the next. And I thought that was odd. And then we drove by what looked to me like a prison. And I asked the driver what it was, and he said, it's the police station. And this was the most heavily fortified police station I've ever seen. And it too had these huge high walls and screens to protect it from projectiles. And it really struck me that it was, I don't want to say, what's the best way? There were clearly signs of conflict, clearly evidence of tension. And I thought there's no need for walls like that. There's no need for those kinds of fortifications and defenses unless there's a threat of some kind. And so I got curious. And as we were driving around, the driver would occasionally say, don't come back here after dark. And he cautioned not to ask questions about things that, you know, I don't know about of strangers. And I got this sense that there was this tension. And I got curious about it. So I started reading their newspapers and their publications and started reading some of the history books and things and nonfiction publications about the Troubles, and discovered that really sticks with them today, that the residue, if you will, of the conflict has stuck with them. And there are a lot of disappeared people. They don't know what happened to them. And those families are trying to find closure. There are folks who are responsible for some atrocities that have never been brought to justice. And the victims' families know that. In some cases, there have been cover-ups, or at least alleged cover-ups of crimes that were never pursued or were intentionally buried. And so there's a lot of a lack of closure. So from a therapist perspective, of course, I got interested in the human ramifications of all that. And I wondered, you know, as I saw kids going around, I thought, you know, they have these murals everywhere in West Belfast that are memorials to or tributes to people who died during the conflict. And they could be on either side of the conflict. And depending on which neighborhood you're in, it'll reflect, you know, the one preference or the other. And it struck me that it would be impossible as a kid. Particularly, like I was in one particular place where there was a sign up that it was a posting from the IRA warning people not to talk to the police. And it was posted on a sign or on a traffic signal at a crosswalk right outside of school. And so it just occurred to me as I was passing these murals and I saw this sign on the traffic sign and was touring the city that as a kid, you could not possibly escape those messages and those reminders. But then as the adults were struggling with finding closure and likely the trauma of having lived through that, it just struck me that everybody at every level, at every age, was experiencing some kind of impact from that conflict, even today, 25 years after the peace agreement ended it, supposedly. Mm-hmm. And so that just got me thinking about what would that be like? And that's sort of the genesis of the characters in my head, of just imagining people on both sides of all ages and the impact on them. And so I tried to bring that to life. And that's really where the book came from.
Oh my, just the physicality of the location, as you say, it doesn't help for lack of closure. I mean, everywhere you look, there's walls and murals and signs, almost like subliminal messages that they can't move past.
That's certainly how it came across to me. And then to see those barriers, I mean, actual physical barriers between the communities and between the police and the community that they're there to protect. It just struck me that this is really a society divided physically and emotionally and politically. Mm-hmm. It's certainly there's been progress. I have to remember I'm an outsider, right?
Yes. So, mm-hmm. No, I get that.
I'm an observer and I'm just sharing my personal reaction to what I saw. Other people may see it differently. Certainly the violence that pervaded society back then, it lasted for 30 years. So that's a long time. I think it's fair to say it was pervasive. it wasn't just in Belfast. It was in other parts of Northern Ireland and even outside Northern Ireland on occasion. But I think that kind of violence warrants scrutiny, and the effect of it warrants scrutiny, because look how it's impacting people today. Yeah. And that's sort of a warning too. You know, I mean, you can look back and see how it originated, and you can see why it persisted so long, and you can see the aftermath of it. But if you leave it at just that, if you leave it at just the study of that one conflict, you're missing, I think, an opportunity to examine what's happening elsewhere in the world and imagining what awaits those societies if they don't figure out an alternative way to approach the differences. A 30-year conflict that spans literally generations leaves a horrible mark on a society. And I don't think anybody wants that for their kids or their grandkids. And so, you know, if we can learn from what happened there, learn about how they're resolving the differences now, how they're healing, how they're trying to bring the two communities back together, then maybe that'll help out some other folks around the world.
Wow. Thinking about trauma, you typically think about individual trauma and then generational trauma, but you're talking about here national trauma. And I'm wondering if fiction can play a role in reconciliation or in helping societies process collective trauma.
You know, I think it probably can. That wasn't my goal here, to be perfectly candid. But I did, as a therapist, want to raise awareness. I sort of had two goals as I was writing this, if I'm going to be completely candid here. One was to educate my fellow Americans about the history of the conflict. I think it's largely misunderstood, if people even are aware of it at all. I know some younger folks that I've interacted with had never heard of the Troubles. And then there are older folks who remember it from the news headlines and things and do recognize it, but maybe don't understand what it was all about. And so part of my goal was to just raise awareness about the history of it. But then I wanted to really get into the impact of that kind of conflict on a society. And I wanted to raise awareness about, in particular, themes of like alcoholism, PTSD, depression. I did a lot of work in the suicide prevention realm. And those other factors, those risk factors of substance use and addiction disorders and traumatic responses, all of that can feed into suicide and suicide risk. And so when I learned as I was researching for the book that Northern Ireland has an exceptionally high rate of PTSD and an unusually high rate of suicide, and unusually high rates of alcoholism, it struck me that those are traumatic reactions. And so I wanted to kind of raise awareness about that and illustrate for people who might not, you know, there's still a huge stigma associated with behavioral health.
Right.
And I thought, if I can illustrate through the characters what a traumatic response might look like, then maybe somebody reading it would recognize it in themselves or in somebody that they care about and start to look at it in a different light and maybe look at a chance to help somebody and reach out. And so that's where some of the conversations in the book come from. That's where some of the observations in the psychologist's office come from. It's just trying to gently raise awareness, not through judgment, not through lectures or anything like that, but just kind of pointing out how a conflict like that can impact people and what the impact might look like in everyday life, so that people just have a better understanding or better insight into what they might be experiencing today or what their family members might be experiencing today.
Mm-hmm. And you work this through your character, Aaron Thornton, who is both a psychologist and somewhat of a flawed character. Where did this person come from?
Just out of the thin air, to be honest with you. I knew I wanted an outsider to be observing this, because I felt that the protagonist had to be completely neutral and objective. And so I thought, one, he needs to be from outside of Northern Ireland, because otherwise he'd have a bias one way or the other. But I also thought, if he's a psychologist, then he's trained to be neutral and objective and non-judgmental. And he's trained to build people's trust and rapport with people and to understand them where they're coming from. And so I thought, what a perfect profession for him to have, to be in that role. And I thought, that's as neutral and objective and compassionate as I can make him. But I had to represent both sides. So that's why he had clients coming from both sides of the conflict. And then I needed to show how people who might not be talking to him, but were nonetheless on the periphery and still impacted, how they were feeling and reacting. So that's how that all came to be. But Thornton is just a figment of my imagination. Throughout the book, there are references to things that I know from personal experience. Mm-hmm. So descriptions of the city. Thornton went to Georgetown, and I've clearly been on Georgetown's campus, so I reflected that accurately. Places in the and events in the book, if they're historical, are accurately described as best I could. That's where he came from. It's just sort of an amalgamation of goals and real life places and events.
Right. As far as the writing process, how did you balance the need for historical accuracy with the demands of a fast-paced thriller?
I probably took a few liberties here and there. The Cynics, for example, I don't want to have any spoilers here, but Cynics is a group in the book that is fictional and is trying to help right some of the wrongs of the past, some of the injustices. They don't exist, to the best of my knowledge. But the Historical Enquiries team that's mentioned in the book, they did exist. That is real. And so where the real life events or circumstances, people helped to inform the story and make it authentic, I included them to the extent that I needed to tell the story a little bit more effectively. I may have created a few things here or there, but generally speaking, it's going to be historically accurate. Apparently, a friend of mine was telling me she works as a hairstylist, and she had a client that was with her who bought the book and couldn't believe some of the things in it. And she said she was fact-checking you as I cut her hair. And she said every time she did, it came out that you were right. And so I was very pleased to hear that, because I did do my best to make it as authentic and accurate as I could.
Oh, yeah, well, there's always research involved, but it really helps that you went to Belfast and you went there and kind of immersed your senses in the place. I think that that bears more fruit than any research could possibly give you.
You could actually, there's a scene where Liam and Patrick are fleeing the British soldiers, and you could actually use the description in the book to navigate your way from that intersection to the monastery where they end up, and it would be accurate. So I really wanted it. I wanted, if somebody did fact check me, I wanted them to find out, oh, wow, all right, he actually did do his research.
Well, that's what's needed. I mean, again, just for authenticity, for people to believe you. And I'm thinking how Belfast just becomes more than just a setting. It's not a place. It's almost a character in itself.
You know, you could think of it that way. And I want to be fair to the folks who lived there and grew up there, recognizing again that I'm an outsider and this is just one man's opinion, one man's perspective. But I do want to say that they have come a long way since the end of the Troubles. And while they're still struggling to deal with some of the aftermath of that, it's a beautiful city. The people are incredibly friendly. It's very welcoming. Game of Thrones really did do a lot for their tourism industry. And there's some beautiful, beautiful areas of Northern Ireland. And so I don't want anybody to be scared off and not go there. And I don't want anybody to think poorly of the Northern Irish population and the residents there. It really is a nice place, but it does have a troubled history. Mm-hmm. And as do a lot of parts of the world. So, but I think we can learn from that. And so I just want to be fair and balanced in my approach now during the interview and acknowledge that it has come a long, long way, and it's not the Belfast of the 1970s and 80s.
Exactly. Now, this was your first book, yes?
It was.
Yes.
It
All
is.
Right.
Yep.
So what can we expect? Is there going to be a sequel?
Absolutely. Hopefully several more books in the series. I am currently trying to decide which way I want to go next. In fact, if anybody has any ideas about which characters they'd like to see reappear in the next one, or if there are any particular preferences among the loose threads that I intentionally left in this book, if there are any particular preferences about which ones we pull in the next book, then I'd love to hear them.
All righty, we can look forward to that. Now, you also run a travel blog. Do you see your travel writing and fiction as separate, or do they influence each other, and how?
Yeah, they absolutely influence each other. The travels are really, I mean, that is what I want my niche to be in the writing world, is travel-inspired thrillers. There are so many interesting stories around the world, so many really intriguing histories, really compelling human interest stories out there that I'd love to bring some light to. And so that will absolutely influence my future writing. But I think the writing also sort of, since I wrote the book, I've had a couple of trips to South America. And while I was down there, I found myself thinking, you know, that would be a good angle. That would be a good character. And so even without intending to, the writing sort of snuck into my brain process there and had me viewing the new places I was seeing sort of through that lens. How could I bring this interesting angle to light through a book?
Wow.
That's a good question.
Thank you. I'm thinking, going back just to the very beginning, so did you plan on ever writing a book, or was that trip to Ireland, was that just what tickled your mind and that place, Belfast, was that the place that encouraged you to think about writing?
Yeah, I think you've nailed it there. I had always wanted to do it. It was on my bucket list. I want to publish a book someday. And it was during that tour that I realized this is what I want to start with.
Okay.
This is just fertile ground for, I think, some really compelling storytelling.
Okay.
Storytelling, yeah, with a purpose, though, not just for the sake of telling a story.
Exactly.
I wanted it to educate and raise awareness. But, you know, not in a preachy way. I think it you got to be entertaining in order to get difficult messages through sometimes.
Yes. There's a fine line there where you just don't go off on that tangent.
Yep, you're absolutely right. So hopefully I managed to maintain the objectivity and the neutrality. I was really interested to see what the first reviews out of the UK said, because mm-hmm. I figured that's where I'll get my pushback if there's going to be any. And there hasn't been. In fact, they've been positive in both private messages that I got and in public reviews. People who lived through it were complimentary of how it came across. So I feel reassured that I didn't offend anybody. I do think the one piece that I got through a private message was just to make sure that Americans understand that this was not, or that anyone around the world really, that this was not a religious conflict, that it was not driven by religious differences. It just happens that Catholics and Protestants found themselves politically on opposing sides, but it wasn't actually a fight between or a conflict between Catholics and Protestants per se. It was more about whether Northern Ireland would rejoin the rest of Ireland or remain part of the UK. And there were very fervent, strong beliefs on both sides of that issue.
Yeah.
And it just happened to align with Catholic and Protestant communities.
Fascinating. I'm so happy we're having this conversation. I'm learning a lot.
Well,
I know our listeners are as well. I want to make sure I'm not missing anything that you wanted to highlight today. Anything else that's coming to your mind that we should talk about?
Well, I think we hit on the key one, and that was to emphasize that Belfast today is a different place. It, in many ways, it is still recovering, but I do want to emphasize the progress that's been made there. And really just to encourage folks to dig into it more, to read more about. There is a plethora of writing on individual stories, individual losses, grandparents who still don't know what happened to their grandkids or vice versa, folks who never got justice for their loved ones who perished through violent means, kids today who are still impacted by the stories that are being told to them by the older generations, who maybe want to shake some of that and get more of a fresh start. So anything that folks can do to educate themselves more, to learn more about the conflict, and more importantly, the people who live through it and are dealing with it today, I think that they'll just discover for themselves some real stories of real people who are struggling with the themes that are identified in the book. And because again, what I've written about is all fiction. Not one of those is based on an actual real person. And so we lose a little bit that way when there's so many actual, genuine individual stories out there that we could read about and learn about real people who are struggling with this on a daily basis and are fascinating people in and of themselves. We don't have to make them up to find some really interesting, compelling human interest stories.
Oh, for sure. For sure. But on the other side of that, I think fictionalizing something like that will attract perhaps more readers who wouldn't typically want to read history or nonfiction. They'll still get the flavor of the message and have an enjoyable and thrilling ride as they read your book.
Absolutely right. And to be fair, we probably don't have all of the stories out there simply because it's still not safe for some folks to tell them.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Yep. The retribution is still a concern on both sides of the conflict. And so some folks prefer not to talk about it at all. And so sometimes, yeah, we have to fictionalize it to get the message out. But mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, thank you for doing that. Thank you for being inspired to do that. All right. Why don't you then share contact information where we can find out more about you and get copies of your book?
Sure. Well, I appreciate that. So my website is daviddummer.com and Dummer is D-U-M-M-E-R. There's no B in it, please. And they can go there. They can also email me at info@daviddummer.com. And the book is available on Amazon, Nook, Smashwords, Kobo, you name it. But again, links are all on the website and folks can click there and choose the retailer of their preference. And I'd love it if they did that.
All righty. We are talking with David Dummer, D-U-M-M-E-R, daviddummer.com is the website. The book is titled Born of Bombs and Bullets. You've got to check out his travel blog as well. David, what an opportunity I've had here today to spend some time with you and find out more about this Firebird Book Award winning author. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate it. I thank you so much for the... for the awards, for the stickers, for the written interview, for the podcast, all of it. I really, really do. It means a lot as a new author, and that support is just immeasurable. So thank you.